Chapter 2. Toothpicks. When I am nervous, like now, I smile. It takes effort to set my face in calm repose when my instinct urges me to flash my teeth. I wonder if it is an ancient reflex to stress. The difference between baring teeth in a smile or fangs in a snarl is not so great. Of course, my teeth are white and strong. I brush and floss them religiously. I have tried all the techniques in my time. Dental tape, dental floss, noisy oral irrigators, floss strung between two prongs like a mini slingshot, and these new minuscule wire brushes colour-coded for their size, the larger for the healthier gums, the smaller for the more inflamed, each like a shrunken version of a brush for baby milk bottles. It takes time and patience. My jaw stretched open in an eternal ah while I clean each crevasse, tooth by tooth, around my mouth. The benefit, of course, is that I still boast all my own teeth, and they shine milky white like mother of pearl inside a shell. When I was a child, life was simpler. We used toothpicks. Every morning after breakfast, before school, I would go to the store cupboard in the kitchen and pick up a carton of toothpicks. My job was to refill the salt and pepper pots on each table and stow the toothpicks in little wooden boxes. It was the custom for everyone to pick their teeth absent-mindedly after they had finished eating, while they washed down lunch or dinner, or my mother's famous strudel with a drink. It was a discreet but public ritual. Now I would consider it vulgar to pick my teeth in public. I floss here in my private lair. As a child, living in a Gasthaus, the distinction between what was public and what was private was unclear. It made me more protective of my privacy. I do not think that I was truly aware of the public arena, the power of spectacle, until the end of the summer of 1943. Children growing up in a war have nothing to compare it to. It is just normal. It was only much later that I came to understand how the South Tyrol, my homeland, had been badly stitched on to Italy after the First World War, when the Austro-Hungarian Empire was unpicked. Trying to fit originally Austrian, German-speaking, Alpine South Tyrol onto Italy was like me trying to sew a teddy bear's arm onto Princess Elizabeth. Since I was 11, families had agonised over the choice between being German or Italian, to opt in or out. The two fascist nations had made an agreement that cut through the fabric of daily life. The young men had to choose between signing up to Hitler's Nazis or Mussolini's black shirts. It tore families in two. Those who opted to stay were denounced as traitors. Those who chose to go to Germany were vilified as Nazis. Men would disappear quietly, conscripted into one or the other army, the families giving as little away as possible. We kept things close to our chest. We were mountain folk and talked of the weather, late snowfalls and summer storms that threatened the crops, not our disgraces. And then, in September 1943, everything changed. The Allies pushed Mussolini north, where he set up his puppet state of Salò in Lake Garda, and the Germans, unable to resist, marched into my homeland, the South Tyrol, and declared it part of Greater Germany. It solved that dilemma of opting in or out, but was in a way more confusing than ever. My parents moaned that they had been born in Austria, lived in Italy, and were now in Germany, without ever having moved from Oberpfalz. It was mid-morning when we had first heard the distant bells tolling in Unterpfalz, and then in St. Martin below us. Hermann Egger, the bell ringer in St. Martin, played the same melodies week in and week out. We were so familiar with his chimes that we knew he would never have created this cacophony willingly. The clanging, discordant crash of metal on metal sounded a beat that we all instinctively understood. It was the panicked forewarning of worse to come. Fräulein Petsch, our teacher, ushered us out of school, urging us to get home without delay. My sister, Christel, and I followed Herr Meyer, the postman, across the square and battled against the stream of men leaving the Gasthaus. My mother was standing by the door, which she closed and locked as soon as we were in. Laurin Meyer walked across the deserted room to his usual table, greeting old Herr Holzner as he passed.